1-800-543-8948 or 1-800-547-0808 for a free client consultation. Located at 115 Industrial Lane in Berlin. Always on time, signs and designs. 223-8948 or 1-800-547-0808.
(244) 1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Thanks for listening to the program this morning. Always appreciate that. Coming up in about 10 minutes here, we're going to talk about mold. Dr. Lauren Tessier is a local naturopath and is quite knowledgeable on the topic. So we'll chat with her, tell you what you need to worry about, what you don't need to worry about. You know, you find all that blue mold on your bread, you know, that kind of thing. Actually, no, the black mold is the stuff that we really got to worry about. But we'll talk about that. I'm going to let her. I'll stop talking about mold. So, Bob, do you ever eat bread that has blue mold on it?
No, I'm kind of weird about that.
Do you cut out the mold and eat the rest of the piece, or you just kind of basically bag that piece, move on to another piece?
Yes, but I must say I spend a great amount of time over the years in India, and eating some mold on bread would be the least of my problems over here.
Right. Former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney is joining us, obviously. See, you know, you practice all the wasting that you did while you were in Congress.
That's right.
What's going on that we should know about?
Well, speaking of Ebola and mold... The czar has been appointed. Now, putting aside whether he's a medical doctor or not, which has been the controversy, and he's political or not, which has been the controversy, the fact remains that there's a hearing on Friday chaired by Congressman Issa of California, who is known politically to be erratic and, not too polite with a lot of people. Now, having said that, though, the White House is declining for the czar to go over to the committee hearing. It's the Oversight Committee hearing. It's on the U.S. response to Ebola. This seems to be, and this is, I'm just speaking for people that I've called and talked to up on the Hill and people sort of in the know, it seems to be a huge error by the White House on two accounts. The press has asked how much is the czar going to make, and they're declining to say that.
Oh, come on.
Mm-hmm. Until he has to file forms... But they've declined. And Mark, I don't get it. He's going to make somewhere for between $82,000 and $175,000. And if he does a good job, I don't care. You know, I don't think the public cares what he makes. But they declined at this point to say what he's going to make, which is just strictly bizarre.
Which makes it this, you know, then makes it like a story. You know,
I mean, that's right. And not going over to the House on Friday. Well, he's new. What does he have to say? Well, then you know.
Then why did we hire him? Then why did we just hire him?
Right, and I know how Congressman Issa is. I served with the man, but I must say, he's elected, he's chairman of a committee, you go over, and at least if he couldn't go over for some legitimate reason, why not call the congressman's office today and say, hey, I'll come meet with you in your office. The White House is not being smart. They're actually throwing gasoline on a situation of not looking at how we prevent this whole Ebola situation, but we've got a nominee who they're going to make more controversial than he is.
Yeah, boy, talk about it. I mean, that is just so poorly handled.
They need to put out a resume and ask for someone with common sense to come advise them, and maybe the Congress, too, obviously, but
right.
I just thought it was a huge misstep.
All right, but this question that you raised earlier, I think, is actually really probably the more critical one, is this whole question about who, you know, is a czar effective? Who should it be? Should it be a doctor or somebody who's more, I guess I would say, politician/administrative type?
If looking at this, it would have been perfect in a scenario to have somebody who is not ignorant of the political system, somebody who's been involved with the political system, which is fine, but to have a medical background, I would assume. I mean, at first I thought, you know, like a lot of people, well, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, you know, with the political side of things, but because this is Ebola, I mean, this is, it'd be like, I don't know, if you've got a crisis in the gasoline situation in America and you appoint somebody that has no idea what oil is about, how effective would they be?
Right.
I just think somebody with some form of a medical background would have been much more of an appeal factor, I would assume.
Yeah.
At least something. Maybe, you know, he's been to an emergency room. I don't know. But something would work.
Yeah. All right. What else should we know about?
This issue, I don't know if you followed this issue about the Nazis and the Social Security.
Yeah. Victoria was talking about it yesterday.
Okay. I mean, I don't know any other way they could have, you know, gotten them out of the country, because we had a case in Ohio for 10 years. Congressman Traffigan actually helped the guy for 10 years. They couldn't get him out of America, you know. So I wanted to mention that. And then the thousands of federal workers are on paid leave. They've announced that over the last 3 years, 57,000 federal workers have been paid a total of $775 million to not come to work. They've been on some type of naughty behavior leave, or some up to a year's period of time. So I think we're in the wrong market job-wise.
Wow. All right. I mean, so is there any sort of explanation on this, Bob?
I think what they're going to find out is that, you know, obviously the agencies who had problems with these people just would rather them go home and stay home and pay them versus, you know, firing them or disciplining them or giving them, you know, time off without pay or something of that nature. It was just easier to just kind of furlough 57,000 people for anywhere from 3 months to 1 year and pay them. I just thought it was a fascinating story. That's $775 million is a lot of money.
I mean, what length of period of time are we talking about here?
Well, 123 of the people were off for 1 year. One of them was a lady who her supervisors in the Department of Interior just thought she was a real pain in the neck. She's always disagreeing with them, so they sent her home for a year and paid her.
Wow. What's the message that we should all take away from that, Bob?
That we're in the wrong profession.
Well, and then you got to, if you're obnoxious, the boss will send you home with pay?
I thought about that. Yes, it be a pain in the neck at work, and maybe they'll get rid of you and say, hey, take a couple of months, you're being bad, and we'll talk to you in 2 months. And by the way, we'll pay you if you don't come back in the office.
Not working, doesn't seem to have worked so far for me for some reason.
I know. I'm going to see if I can get Ellen to pay me. I don't think she will.
No, I don't think
matter,
so either.
I don't think Ellen would care how mean I got.
No, I think you might in fact get your pay enhanced. You never know.
That's right. I'll get a pay increase and more time.
Boy, I'm reading more and more that it's looking like a lock that the Senate is going to go Republican.
I think if it does, it goes by one vote. I think that's a great chance. But, the great big but, I think they're going to have a carnivore day. I mean, they're going to eat themselves alive, and this may not enhance the Republicans' chances in 2016.
Why?
Plus, they're going to have a Senate, which, unless you have about a 10-vote plurality, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
That Senate will be paralyzed.
Why do you say it hurts them in 2016?
Because you'll have one government rule, and I saw this happen when I was in Congress when we had one-party rule, and eventually the base, the Republicans, say, you didn't get anything done, you didn't stop the president. And then people like Mitch McConnell, who will be running the Senate, will come back and say, well, we need more seats. And the average man and woman out in America are going to say, what do you mean? You control the Senate. What are you talking about? They don't get it. You know, they have this cloture rule and all these procedures, so they need a bigger majority than one seat. And I argue that within about a year, they're going to eat each other alive and do more internal arguments, and I think it won't necessarily benefit them as much as they think it will.
All right. Interesting theory.
They'll argue with each other too much internally.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
That's about it for today.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Watch out for that blue mold in your bread, okay?
I'll try.
And I don't think any other hosts are going to ask you about that today, so you don't have to worry about it.
You're the first, and you might be the last today, but it was a great question.
I will bet that I am the last. If anybody else does ask you that question, will you remind me that
I'm going to call you back.
Else? Yeah, do. Call me back.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. That's former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney, who joins us on a regular basis, usually on Tuesdays, which would be today. You can reach us. If you have any questions or comments about mold, we'd love to hear from you. If you've had any challenging experiences, of course, we want to hear about that, too. And we're going to take a quick commercial break. 244-1777, our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. Back after this.
This Saturday, Phil Scott's 10th annual Wheels for Warmth Tire Sale or Recycle event rolls at Dubois Construction, 3 Mile Bridge Road, Montpelier, starting at 7. It's one of the most unique programs in Vermont, making tires all sizes available at $15 to $25 each. Bring those old, unusable ones and turn them in for $4 per tire. They pass inspection, they go to the giant sale. If not, thanks to folks like Bond Auto, Vianor, Village Grocery, Dick Maz's General Store, because every penny goes to Phil Scott's Wheels for Warmth program. Have tires to donate? Drop them off this Thursday or Friday, 3 to 7 at Dubois Construction, 3 Mile Bridge Road, Montpelier, or Casella, Avenue B, Williston. Saturday, turn in tires at Dubois Construction as part of this very special 10th annual event. Phil Scott's Wheels for Warmth program this Saturday.
We are high performance, low pressure. Walker Volkswagen on the Barrie Montpelier Road is celebrating its grand reopening, and you are invited. We have finished our dealership's renovation and expansion project and are excited to share our passion for Volkswagen with you. We are so excited that we are giving away a new Volkswagen Beetle. I told you we are seriously celebrating. Take advantage of Walker Volkswagen's grand reopening celebration with our deeply discounted upfront pricing that eliminates all the gimmicks and stressful negotiations in buying your next car. When combined with 0% financing on every 2014 Volkswagen model, you can save thousands of dollars. Join in Walker Volkswagen's grand reopening celebration on the Barrie Montpelier Road. See how you can be driving an affordable German-engineered European-style Volkswagen. Stop by, call, or click walkervt.com to see why we are Vermont's source for everything Volkswagen. Oh, and remember to ask us about the Volkswagen Beetle giveaway.
Vermont Community Loan Fund borrower and Vermont business owner Bob Light talks about the Vermont Community Loan Fund.
When my wife Lee and I wanted to expand our Hollister Hill Farm bed and breakfast and to expand our farm store, we looked around for a loan. Traditional lenders weren't interested in our business plan. Then we heard about the Vermont Community Loan Fund. The loan fund looks at lending differently. It isn't just about the bottom line. It's about building Vermont's future, Vermont's businesses, and jobs.
The Vermont Community Loan Fund is a mission-driven lender. We focus on people, not profits. We're lending money to Vermont's small businesses to help them succeed.
The Loan Fund really looked at the whole picture with us. They saw how we were an asset to Vermont. Now, we're growing and proud to contribute to what makes Vermont work.
If you're looking for a business loan, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, where we look at lending differently. Visit investinvermont.org.
Do you have water damage or soot damage? Call SR Services in Montpelier. They're the experts. Don't get discouraged if your home has been damaged by water from flooding or a leaky roof. SR Services has the equipment and expertise to restore the appearance of your home to like new again. They work on tile and grout floors, too. Gray grout lines will be white again, thanks to SR Services. For water and smoke damage or professional carpet cleaning, call SR Services at 223-6577. SR Services, 407 Barrie Street in Montpelier, 223-6577.
All right, we're back, and let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to our local mold expert. Dr. Lauren Tessier is joining us. She's a local naturopath. We've talked about sleep issues in the past. What else have we talked about?
Lyme
ADHD. Disease. ADHD, can't even remember. And this morning we're going to talk about some of the evils of mold. Maybe there's actually, are there any positives of mold?
We do have penicillin.
Okay. All right. Well, before we get any further here, let's take a call from Moncton Ridge. Fred, how you doing this morning?
Good. Just a comment on the last thing with Bob May.
Yeah.
Just make it quick. The reason why somebody medical is not in there, the Surgeon General has been up for a nomination for 10 or 11 months, and the Republican Congress will not vote anybody that Obama's recommended in. That's why they don't have a medical fella in there right now.
All right, but why do you think they'd put in the political person then?
I have no idea about that, but that's. I think they needed an organizer.
Okay.
My own opinion, you know, he's going to hire the best doctors, I believe.
Right.
I think they needed an organizer.
Yeah, that's my opinion. Yeah. I mean, I guess I was wondering the same thing, too. You know, I mean, it's not as though you wouldn't have the best medical minds at your disposal.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But it's being so politicized right now. It's just, it's almost not fun to hear anymore. You know, it's just not fun.
Yeah.
I'd rather hear about mold. Let's hear about mold.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Fred. Okay. Thank you for getting out of the way here and letting us proceed. I appreciate it. 244-1777, our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So mold's something we really don't need to worry about because we live here in Vermont and it gets really cold in the winter.
Right. That's a very interesting segue to start with. I mean, mold is everywhere, and in the winter, especially when you're dealing with a superheated house and you're breathing up against the windows, you're getting condensation, you're getting some type of fluid accumulation. Very shortly thereafter, mold will follow if we don't have the proper ventilation.
God, the description you just gave, I felt like I was about to get Ebola. Wow. So every house has mold?
You know, I can't say for sure that every house has mold. Any houses that have incurred water damage, not pointing any fingers to the local community, but there is very much a high likelihood for mold to be present.
Right. We're talking about Tropical Storm Irene.
Mm-hmm. And even, you know, down New York City, a lot of people are dealing with mold issues now from Sandy. You know, they had so many things under feet and feet of water. So, I mean, it affects everyone, and it definitely is very relevant to our community.
There's only one kind of mold, isn't there?
You've done your research. I passed the number while I was doing some of my research for our little get-together today, and there's over thousands of different types of mold. And the thing to point out is it's not necessarily the mold that's the problem. It's what the mold produces. And this is where we jump right into the meat of potatoes of it all. It's called mycotoxin. So if we take a step back, and we think about mold, we, you know, think down to our basements, we have that big sheet of mold crawling up the wall, and that's the mold itself. But if we break it down into different parts, we have mold fragments, we have mold spores, and then we have the smallest component, which is the mold mycotoxin. The mold mycotoxin has been shown to be the most damaging component of the mold on the human system. And so, of course, as you know, when I come in for talks, I always have the little
samples.
Right, the samples. I always have the cautionary point wherein there's a problem in our medical paradigm where we're not properly testing for mold environmentally and in the human system.
Okay. So you say there are all these different components in the mold. It almost sounds like it's not the crime, but it's the cover-up. You need more information.
I need a little bit more
so
than that.
It's actually the mycotoxin. So go back here.
Right.
What is mold?
Right. So mold is a species of...
What?
It's a fungus. It's a fungus. There are numerous different subspecies. We can't necessarily call it a plant. We can't call it an animal. It has its own kingdom. It's in the fungus kingdom. Depending on the subspecies, we're putting it into different classes, different families, different phyla. Not too boned up on that part, but it is in the fungus kingdom. So anything in the fungus kingdom is going to repopulate, kind of grow through what we call sporulation. So it's going to go through a fruiting body phase. You can almost equate that to almost like the flower in the plant kingdom. And biologists out there I know are kind of sucking their teeth at that statement. And then the spores are actually the component of the mold that is responsible for its reproductive cycle.
Okay.
The other thing that I mentioned, the mold fragments, those just happen to be the incidental small pieces lying around of the mold. And the mycotoxins act as the mold's immune system, per se. So when the mold becomes threatened, possibly by another mold, possibly by some type of chemical in its environment, it will actually upswing its production of mycotoxins to a higher level, which can cause even severe health impacts.
Is there a beneficial role that mold plays?
I mean, I think anything in biology, when you look down to feeding and breaking things down and degrading things, mold is in the fungus family. It does break things down. It is a part of our, you know, grand scheme of recycling and building up and recycling and building up. So it does have its role to play in an ecological standpoint. Unfortunately, that's not something that I necessarily focused on for today. But, I mean, you can always find a rhyme or reason for anything to fit into the hierarchy of things.
So let's talk about what some of the bad molds are. What are some of the super bad molds?
Super bad molds. There's a few species. Aspergillus probably rings a bell for some people, but there are subspecies within the Aspergillus. So it's the Aspergillus family, and then...
I don't know what you're talking about. What is that?
So Aspergillus, that is, I think, one of the more common molds. I think it's the green mold. I really can't be pressed on that. Like I said, I'm more focusing on the mycotoxin component today. but we do have a few different forms of mold that are of the most concern for general health and well-being, and those tend to produce three major mycotoxins that are of the most concern. People may have heard of aflatoxins, arachitoxins, and trichothiocine, and those are the three major components of mycotoxins that are the most problematic for people. And of course, of these three major mycotoxins, there's also subtypes. Subtypes that have been individually studied for their health impact, sometimes that they haven't. So this is still a new frontier very much that we're getting into.
So what are some of the some of the negative health consequences here?
How much time do we have?
We've got tons of time.
Okay, so it really depends on what system we're looking at. We can break it down into body systems. When we're dealing with respiration and inhalation of particles, we're looking at a lot of allergies. We're looking at asthma. We're looking at local lung irritation. We're looking at bronchitis. There's also been links to upswing in lung cancer. When we're dealing with gastrointestinal, when we're dealing with it being on foods and eating it, we're seeing gastrointestinal distress, diarrhea, all that kind of good stuff. And we're even finding it in colon cancer samples, post-autopsy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And then that we even have a whole slew of neurological components. And that's what I tend to find a lot of my patients are coming in for, is the neurological component. So, you know, people are coming in with fatigue, muscle aches, joint pains, headache, dizziness, delirium, insomnia, dementia, tremors. They have the shakes, heart palpitations. They might be swelling. There's whole list of complaints that really come along with it. And the unfortunate part is usually it's amorphous. So in medicine, we look for a constellation of symptoms. We look for A plus B plus C plus E. Okay, well, this must be heart disease. Or, you know, we're seeing these signs and symptoms over here, so this must be this disease.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, when you see patients present, they'll come in and they'll say, I feel heady. I feel weird. My energy levels haven't been the same. My joints are aching. And, you know, you more or less are left at a loss. A lot of these patients are actually put on antidepressants.
Wow.
Yep, because people don't really know what else to do. So mold testing is something that is unfortunately expensive, but it's definitely warranted in those really vague cases.
But those symptoms that you just described, I mean, 80% of those could be associated with something else.
Right, and that's why it's necessary to rule everything else out first. I mean, a headache can be anything from a seasonal allergy to life stress to a brain tumor to, you know, really anything. So
Right. It's
really involves doing the clinical investigation with finding out what they're exposed to, you know, the timing of it. When is it happening? Is it only happening in one location? Is it only happening a certain time of year? And a lot of times when you do that digging, there'll usually be a little light that goes off where people will go, well, now that you say it, now that I think of it. So it's definitely an interesting process to kind of unravel and try to help figure out.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. We're talking mold with Dr. Lauren Tess here. Let's go to Middlesex. Hi, Fred. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Now, aren't these molds, I just barely turned in, so if you've already gone over this, you know, disregard my comments. But aren't the molds, like, everywhere, like, all these places that got flooded out and stuff, there's still mold there that can potentially grow? And aren't only, like, 3-5% of the population allergic to these, and the rest of us, molds are good for us, like cheese and penicillin and stuff? And those people that are highly allergic to it are asthmatic or have some sort of respiratory ailment?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We talked about this a little bit, but it's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things to keep in mind is that the genetics definitely plays a big role in this. And so there are different genetic pathways that people pass down from generation to generation, and they're finding that people who have a sensitivity to mold, an increased sensitivity to mold, are having issues with their CYP450, their HLA pathways, and their GST pathways. And all of these either help to modulate the immune system and help it achieve a response in a proper way, not just any response at all, but they also help to correctly detoxify the mycotoxins from the system. So there is a certain genetic susceptibility for people when it comes to being reactive to mycotoxins. Our caller was correct regarding that. One thing to keep in mind, though, it doesn't always manifest as respiratory symptoms. As we said, it can be anything from heart palpitations to autoimmune diseases to anxiety to dizziness. I mean, they've even seen infertility and, you know, vomiting disorders and nausea associated with it. So it all manifests very differently in each person depending on what their system can take and process.
Mm-hmm. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. So at what point do you test?
What point do I test? That's a good question. I typically test when all other things have been ruled out, or if there's a point where sending a patient down a certain path of diagnosis is a point of no return. And I can get into that a little bit, but, you know, it's a lot of times when people have neurological issues where, you know, they'll have dementia or they'll have anxiety or depression or things like that. What I mean is being diagnosed down the path of no return is they'll be put on a medication indefinitely in hopes of something working. So mm-hmm. Once we've more or less rolled out all the more serious things that are sudden and of severe concern that, you know, could lead to death and, you know, all the red flags are cleared and out of the way, that's when we start to consider mold testing. And unfortunately, there is definitely a discussion involving the finances of mold testing. So, mold testing, this is Pandora's box. And what it ends up coming down to is we're testing for the wrong things currently in the medical establishment. We are testing more specifically for the mold.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can kind of follow me visually, when we're dealing with mold fragments and mold spores, we're dealing with things that are 1 micron to maybe 0.2, 0.5 microns. When we get down to the mycotoxin level, we're dealing with things that are 0.1 microns. So we're talking about a tenth of the size. When we look at the lungs and we look at the GI system, we have this beautiful barrier that's supposed to keep all the bad things out and take all the good things in. The problem mm-hmm. is that the mycotoxins are small enough to cross that barrier. So you'll see labs that are testing for mold. They'll go in, they'll draw the person's blood, they look for mold, they look for spores. Nothing. There's no immune system reaction to the mold or the spores. That's because they're not in the system. What's actually in the system is the mycotoxin.
Okay.
There's only one lab in the United States that tests, that is certified to test in humans mycotoxins. And I use them in my practice. I have no affiliation with them other than the thankfulness and respect I have for what they've done for my patients. But we're seeing just the fact that there's one lab, their prices are expensive because of what the population demands that they have to meet and just starting up and, you know, having all the legalities in place to try to meet the demands.
Right.
Both legally and medically. So one lab, mycotoxin testing for humans. There's a few other mycotoxin testing labs around the country, but they mostly only test for foods. And there is some environmental testing labs for mycotoxin, but I've only used real-time labs so far for when it comes to environmental mycotoxin testing.
So I'll go back to the phone here, 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go to Barry. Hi, Serena. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm really interested in your show because I was diagnosed in 2006 with invasive aspergillosis, and I've been living with that since then. It's, as you say, it's not a very common thing, and it's not tested for, you know, regularly. And I think I have to disagree that I think that this should be tested for first. Versus last, because in my case, it took over 8 months before I had a diagnosis, in which case I almost didn't make it.
Hmm.
You know, I had children at the time, young children at the time, and I had to watch their mother go through this, and it's very scary. You know, you go to the doctors, you know, you just get an antibiotic after an antibiotic after an antibiotic, and antibiotics don't work. They don't do anything for fungus.
Okay.
Sorry, I was kind of caught off by the show. It's very personal for me.
Well, I appreciate you calling. It's helpful for us to have a story to talk about. Thank you.
One of the interesting things about antibiotic therapy is that it more or less wipes out your beneficial gut flora, so all the good bacteria that's actually there and a very active part of your immunity. And in doing so, in taking antibiotics, you're wiping that protection out, and a lot of times docs won't turn to antifungal drugs, and instead they'll put patients on a steroid, some type of oral steroid, which works to suppress the immune system, and then what ends up happening is you have even more of a fungal overgrowth. So the typical treatment that people are given for like chronic sinusitis when there's an underlying unknown fungal infection can actually potentiate and worsen the infection.
Wow. Then I've heard about people using these neti pots who have an infection and kind of spreading it all around and things like that too, right? No?
With the neti pots, I haven't seen too much of it causing a longer infection. But then again, some people will add additives to their neti pots. They'll add golden seal. They'll add zinc. You can definitely add some herbs and infusions that are antifungal to help kind of mitigate that infection.
Let's go to Chelsea. Diane, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to find out how do you get rid of the mold from the environment.
Okay.
That is the million-dollar question. When it comes to mold remediation, that is another hot topic, and I appreciate the caller for asking that. I am by no means an expert on mold remediation in the environment. I'm remotely skilled at mold remediation in the human being, in the human system. When you're dealing with mold remediation in the environment, there have been numerous tests that have shown that the most commonly suggested means by which to remove mold are actually not all that efficacious at all. So some of the things that people suggest, a 5% bleach solution, heat to 500 degrees for 30 minutes or 900 degrees for 10 minutes, ozone, boron-based chemicals, burning with flames, peroxide application, ammonia chloride application, UV light, steam, all of these things have shown to not be 100% effective by any means. So, and once again, this is more focusing on the mycotoxin component. You can pour bleach on mold and visually see that the mold is gone. The mold is easy to kill. It's what remains after the fact that's damaging, right? So they're saying that boron-based chemicals and ammonia chloride in that study that I had mentioned were the most effective, but they still weren't 100% effective. So remediation, if you do some research and you go on to EPA.gov or the Indoor Air Quality Association, they'll more or less tell you to do a negative pressure room to make sure all the spores and the fragments stay in the room. They'll also tell you to wear personal protective equipment, and I can get into why in a minute. And they tell you to use bleach. They don't really, or, you know, some type of detergent. There are some companies around that do an enzymatic cleaning where they'll use some type of enzyme to help degrade the mold, the spores, and the fragments, but I'm not really clear on who they are. I haven't spoken with them or interacted with them.
Okay, so some of these molds are really deadly. I mean, like this black mold that you can get in your house can be deadly, right?
Right, right. That mold in particular, Stachy, the reason why, Stachy botrys, the reason why it's dangerous is because of the mycotoxin that's found in it. So pretty much all those molds that we hear about, the black mold particular that has all the rage, you know, it's the mycotoxin component of them that's just the worst part, really.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Randolph Center. Bill, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Lauren Tessier.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention I used to do house inspections, and mold would show up now and then. And a lot of the times, a few of the times, and then a lot of them, but the few times that mold seems to show up, it has to have the proper temperature and the proper moisture to survive, I think. But the cause usually seemed to be that people would put the plastic on the wrong side of the wall. Any vapor barriers that you put in a house, you put on the warm side. And the cases where I found the mold is when they put it on the outside or underneath a crawl space on the wood, under the crawl space when it should have been on the warm side of the wall. So that's just a thing I would throw out there. Anyway.
Okay. All right.
You're up.
Yeah, I think that's great insight, Bill. There's a lot of things that you can do to help mitigate that moisture spiral. You know, you can use desiccants, you can use your dehumidifiers, you know, you can make sure that there's some type of proper ventilation always going in the rooms where there are dampness. And I've even heard people going out and as cheap as going and getting a 50-pound bag of cat litter and keeping it in the corner to help dry things out. Like I said, that won't remove the mold, that won't remove the mycotoxins, but it can definitely help to decrease some of the dampness that, you know, makes things prone to mold.
Wow, okay. Plus, it's a dual-purpose product. We always love dual-purpose products. We'll take a quick commercial break. We'll come back, continue our discussion. If you have any questions about mold, great opportunity for you to ask. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll-free at 1-888-321-0815 and on the web at gmavt.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about one of the local state's attorney races. Tom Kelly joins us. Also, we'll talk about the Congo coming up tomorrow. There's a conference going on up in Burlington, and we'll explore that as well. Quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Hey,
are side by side for the race lead here at Martinsville.
The chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup is on the Motor Racing Network.
Winning the STP 500 is Kurt Busch.
Coverage continues Sunday with the Goodies Headache Relief Shot 500 from Martinsville. Here at Live at 12:30 p.m. on the Motor Racing Network. The voice of NASCAR.
Join us Saturday at 12:30 for the first race of the Eliminator Round for the NASCAR Championship, only on WDEV.
At 802 Honda, we're not only the fastest growing Honda dealership in Vermont, we're also the number one volume dealer of certified Hondas. Hi, this is Bentley and Dave. In October, customers get three great offers on our certified pre-owned Hondas.
Every certified Honda will be equipped with a hands-free cradle for your cell phone because it is the law. Every certified pre-owned Honda will also be eligible for 1.9% financing for up to 60 months. And when you finance at 1.9, you'll have no payments until January of 2015. You will love our low-pressure sales approach.
And you'll be back because of our top-ranked service department.
802 Honda certified pre-owned sales event. Hands-free cell phone cradle with every purchase. 1.9% financing up to 60 months and no payments until next year. So click on 802honda.com for details. Call 844-802-HONDA or drive I-89 to exit 7 for less than 1 minute off the interstate.
802 Honda, driving to be Vermont's number one Honda dealer.
Financing for well-qualified buyers. See dealer for details.
Good morning. Amy here from Auto Craftsman in Montpelier. I don't know about you, but every day I'm seeing more colored leaves. And I know after autumn comes winter, and with winter comes salt brine all over our roads. That salt brine is causing all our vehicles to rust away before their time. Auto Craftsman has the best rust-proofing solution around. Corrosion-free is a mineral oil product that is non-toxic, odor-free, and won't drip all over your garage. It helps protect your car from rust, and it dissolves and neutralizes existing rust and corrosion. We can apply it for you every 18 months, or you can purchase it by the can and do it yourself. Oh, and all you snowplow guys, this product can be applied to your blade mount and hydraulic unit to keep it from rusting away, too. For more information, call 223-2253 or go to our website at autocraftsman.com.
What does your food sound like? What does your food business sound like? Let's make it happen. Come visit us at the Vermont Food Venture Center in Hardwick. We have industrial kitchens, business advising, technical assistance, food safety training, and more. The Vermont Food Venture Center is here for you and your food product. Our kitchens get food businesses cooking. Check us out online at www.hardwickagriculture.org.
.244-1777 is our local number. If you have any comments or questions about mold, we've been chatting with Dr. Lauren Tessier, a local naturopath who has been studying the issue. Let's take a couple more calls here. Let's head down to Rochester. Heather, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about, I was living in a place that the roof was, part of the shingles were off the roof for quite a while, like 6 months or something, and there it ended up leaking through so bad that water would drip into the building when it rained, and this was my bedroom. And there was black mold on the ceiling and on the walls that I cleaned off with bleach, but I'm wondering if I have the neurotoxins, and I definitely have been feeling sluggish since then, and I wonder if you could talk about how to test for it, where to get tested for it, and also kind of what are some of the more of the symptoms.
So do you still live there?
No. No, okay. Thank God.
All right.
Okay, good. One of the things to keep in mind...
Can I ask one other question? How long have you not lived there?
I think a year.
Okay. All right. Wow.
So one of the things to keep in mind as not only a tenant, where you're paying to live, but also as an employee, you have the right to a safe living, working environment. Mm-hmm. So there can actually be, I'm by no means a lawyer giving you any type of legal advice, but there has been history of mold litigation cases that have come up, and I believe we have a couple of mold litigation lawyers in the state of Vermont. So that's always something to keep in mind.
Well, that's good to know.
Not necessarily saying that that's a route that you should take, just letting all the other listeners know about that, too. So
where do you find those people?
I would just do a good old Google search for those. Yeah. So to go back to your question, you know, we can't really be sure based on just the symptoms alone as to whether or not your experiences are still being directly impacted by the mold mycotoxins. The best lab, like I had mentioned earlier, my favorite lab, the one that I'm not affiliated by any way, shape, or form, but has been of great use in my practice, has been Real Time Labs. They're based out of Texas, and the labs are available through contracted providers, so they do have to be ordered by a physician. So, you know, and I do think if you go on their website, they have a listing of physicians who are contracted with them. So that might be something you
So you should get
into.
A blood drawing and send that in and have it tested?
Right. Well, actually, it's a urine test.
Okay.
And the issue with urine tests is that it tracks what we're pushing out of our body.
Right.
So rather than letting us know you're positive or negative for mycotoxins, because they can be stored in the tissues, what we use, how we use the lab specifically, is for tracking parameters. So we'll do like 4 or 5 data set points over a certain period of time to make sure that we're seeing the patterns that we want of our numbers spiking, which means that we're urinating them out, we're passing them out, and then making sure the numbers drop back down afterwards. So, you know, it's a long, lengthy, involved process, and you definitely need to be ready to work with someone who knows what they're doing. And like I said, I highly suggest Real Time Labs for the service that they do provide.
All right. Let's say she tests whatever the right term is, positive or negative, I'm not sure which, then so what would you then do with her to help her get better?
Right. Well, that's a good question. There's a numerous steps that are involved because the mycotoxins impact us in lots of ways, not just one. So the first thing would be to reduce and remove the exposure. And then
it sounds like she's done that.
Right.
Moving out. I mean, a year later, this stuff's still affecting her?
Right. Well, there was a study that was done where geriatric adults who had mold exposure had some improvement after being removed from the situation, but it was noted that as time passed, the neurocognitive complaints actually worsened, and they weren't clear if full remediation was actually achieved. So, you know, and like I said, on autopsy, they found it in nasal polyps, they found it in cancerous breast tissue, they found it in bladder tumors and lymph nodes and lung tissues and kidney tumors. So I'm pretty sure all signs point to these things get stored in the tissues. So like we were saying, reducing exposure. And then we have to work on decreasing the inflammation, decreasing the oxidative stress, the problematic impact of the mycotoxins. And then we need to work on detox and sequestering the mycotoxins, pulling them out of the system. And then there's the whole component of when we're working with the detox and degradation of the mycotoxins, that's when we start to look at that genetic picture to see if the person's genetic pathways are, in fact, able to process and push the mold out of the system.
How do you detox somebody with this?
So right now, I have a few different approaches. One of the main ones is using what we call a bile acid sequestering agent. So a lot of the detox happens.
Does it come in orange?
You know, we could probably get it compounded in orange flavored. But it more or less attracts the mycotoxins through an electric charge, you know, based on the electrons in the medication. And it will bind to the mycotoxins and pull them out. And specifically, when our liver processes things, it gets sent to the gallbladder, and then so the whole idea here is stimulating the gallbladder to work to secrete and keep secreting anything that's coming into the system so that we can support the detox that way. There's a few other ways too, but right now that seems to be the mold that's working the best, and it lowers lipids too, so mm-hmm. it can't hurt.
Okay, all right. You don't do like bleeding or no. like the old days. Okay.
No leeches.
Let's go to, first let me take a moment to remind you about our good friends at Jamison Insurance. If you're looking for that great hometown company, local company, family-run company to help you with your insurance, make it the Jamison family. Here's the main number in Waitsfield, 496-2080. And you can always find a lot of information online at jamisoninsurance.com. Offices in Waitsfield, right around the corner here in Waterbury, and also up in Richmond. Again, jamisoninsurance.com. Let's go to Callis. Joe, good morning.
We have a lot of houseplants, and some of the houseplants you're supposed to let get drilled dry before you water them again. Every time we do that, we really smell a lot of moldy smells. Could you talk about that kind of mold and whether it's harmful and how you can get rid of it?
Right.
You know, Joe, I have to say I am not the expert on that. I'm not the expert on molds that are growing in soil, and I'm unfortunately not clear about what mycotoxins you might be exposed to from that specific mold. That might be something that you'd want to maybe contact a soil ecologist to see if they could run samples to see what kind of mold is specifically in there. And I really do apologize for not being able to give you more information than that.
Let's go to Chelsea. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning. I used to live in New York, 75 miles outside of Manhattan. And our home had mold on the aluminum frame windows.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to wash it down with bleach. But regardless, I used to get very bad asthma attacks. And to the point where I was almost hospitalized once. They kept me in the emergency ward for quite a while after giving me some kind of a shot. But I want to praise the Lord because we moved to Vermont and I was able to get rid of my inhalers completely.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It was just something that was growing either in that house or in that area. Because I wouldn't have to be in the house to have an asthma attack.
Right.
Wow.
But I'm very thankful for the wonderful clean air in Vermont.
Yeah.
And Barbara, okay. you know, you're a lucky one that you were able to move out of your situation. I do have a lot of patients that when I express a concern about mold, they say, well, I can't move out. I don't have the money to remediate. Like, what do I do? And it comes down to the idea of just getting whoever is that sick or that ill exposed and even put them in another room. I've seen patients who move rooms, swap their rooms with their kids, and their symptoms just change dramatically, and that's all because of that genetic component.
Wait, what happened to their kids?
The kids are fine.
How come?
The kids are fine because they have the genetics where their body can actually process the mycotoxins.
Okay.
So, you know, it's an interesting concept.
Did that answer your question, Barbara?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say that I'm thankful for moving to Vermont and getting rid of all the asthma attacks.
That's remarkable. I mean, what a great story. I mean, you can actually have that dramatic a recovery.
Right.
Thank you for calling.
Okay,
I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All right, we don't have a lot of time left here. So, first of all, how do people find you if they want to get more information or if they're worried that this might be actually happening to them?
Sure. People can go ahead and give me a call. The phone number is 802-560-5594. Once again, 802-560-5594. I do have a website, and that's drlaurentessier.com, and you can also start looking me up through Waterbury Integrative Health. We recently expanded, so there'll be some more news regarding that on the horizon.
So if this is a solvable problem for people?
It is a solvable problem for people, but the take-home message is the remediation is key. People need to make sure that they remove themselves from the element that is making them sick. Otherwise, you're going to jump through hoops over and over and over again, and you're just going to keep worsening the situation without having any resolution.
All right. Phone number again, 5594.
Forgetting my own number this morning.
All right, one more time here.
802-560-5594.
See, the problem is you never call yourself. Call yourself more often. right, we're going to talk about the Congo coming up on the program tomorrow and among topics. And then on Friday, we're going to get a little spooky here with some graveyard talk with local cemetery aficionado Dan Barlow. We wonder a little bit about him. That's going to wrap things up for today. Have a great day. Come back and join us tomorrow. Widget, this is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush and the flagship AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is next. AP Radio.